specialist with Microsoft, and I'm here with Tobias.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
What do you do? Tell us a little more about your role and your company.
So in logistics, we are a company in the space of experience design. We provide front-end controls on .NET, ASP.NET, WinForms, WPF, and Silverlight. And within Infogistics, we also have a service organization where we help customers in training and consulting. And I'm the director of user experience.
That's phenomenal. That's excellent. So we didn't just start out with some of the technologies that you mentioned, such as WPF and Silverlight. Take us a little bit through history of kind of where did we come from? How did we get to where we are?
Yeah, well, if you remember back then, semi-graphics, all you could do with graphics was showing some column charts with really monolithic blocks of things, and it was your graphics. And then later we had GDI. After GDI, the trend was to move more towards finer and granular graphics, vector graphics. So we did have DirectX. And after DirectX, to make it even more comfortable for developers on to produce these graphics and to be really flexible on how they are displayed and rendered, you guys came up with WPF and Silverlight. It was quite a step in the process.
So it was a natural progression to essentially enable and kind of bring the power of vector graphics just to everybody.
Yep, exactly. And I think that's the question.
Yeah.
I wait for your why.
Yeah. But it's so one thing that is extremely difficult is to figure out how the UI fits and how it not only fits into the application, but why did we come up with vector graphics? What was so important? We could render pixels with GDI. What was important? Why was vector graphics important?
Yeah. Well, look at these devices here. So what we've seen over the last years was you have all kinds of form factors for the output. You have different sizes. You have different scalings, resolutions. 10 years ago, it was a pretty sure bet you have a 4:3 ratio aspect for your monitor display. Today, you have everything from 4:3, 5:4, 16:9, 16:10, and beyond. Nowadays, the monitors are so cheap. You have large screens, you have small devices, you have handhelds. So here's 15-inch, 12.1, 8.4, you have this little cell phone here. And so think about, do you really want, like in the old days, define your screen real estate, like fixed, so you have a graphics and it only works in this resolution, that size? Or what do you do if you know that your users have different output devices, especially on the web? There's nothing you can control that. And so for that reason, we need to be really flexible in the way we render our graphics because we cannot know the output device settings.
And the interesting thing is, in the two of the stores that we currently have, the walls themselves, the length of the entire wall, is actually a WPF application. So it kind of directly fits into your description that you could just never know of how big or how small or how wide or how narrow the interface is going to be. And vector graphics kind of helps you define that. And with, of course, with the Windows 7, with the Windows Phone 7 series, the size of the display is enormous. It's just your viewpoint is very small.
Yes.
And that kind of fits. But how do you go about? It sounds like a complex problem. And I'm not a UI designer, and I've tried. Believe me. But how do you go about even attacking something like this but creating UI that that fits across these devices? Because it's kind of difficult. This is not a straightforward problem.
Yeah. So obviously in user-centered design, you want to start with really understanding what your customers is trying to achieve. So what are their objectives? What are their goals? What are the tasks at hand? What are the things that are to be displayed and maybe rendered as a graphics? And then we made really good experiences with a pattern that's called Fluid UI. Because, as we said, you cannot really know the output device that users will have. So you don't know exactly the real ratio. You don't really know the real diagonal. And so a Fluid UI approach implies that you use objects that you want to display that kind of intelligently negotiate screen real estate amongst each other. So just to show that a little bit on the whiteboard, so let's say we have two different screen layouts or output devices, and this may be a 16 by 10. And here we have a classical 5:4 ratio. So we just had a very interesting project where we had to show a lot of things on the screen. And the trend is also to move a little bit away from like numerical data in strict columns and show it more like appealing in graphics. So we just use like bubbles, and I just draw them really large here for the camera, but they were a lot of bubbles. So let's say I have four bubbles here on this large screen. Now what happens if I have a smaller screen? What do I do with my four bubbles? Because now they don't fit in there.
Right.
Well, the nice thing about vector obviously is we can just rescale them. So we can intelligently say, well, scale them down a little bit, so I have the same four bubbles here. Now, what happens if I want to drill down into one of these? No matter what it is, they just have some meaning. But let's say I want to drill down into this one bubble here and say, what's it really included here? How I can drill down in there? So I would click here, and the fluid UI approach means that these guys negotiate their room amongst each other, like really artificially and intelligently, without the user having to like rescale things.
Right.
So if I say drill down into this one here, this guy here is in the center of focus, and these guys here, they will shrink down automatically because they make room, because I may need to show another pop-up here that shows some specific data, let's say, you know, a bar chart or something on this one. So these guys would move down and shrink down. It's not me setting some zoom levels, which is really like effortsome because it's manual work. These guys do this on their own. We just calculate the screen real estate that we need. The nice thing is, with that algorithm, we can do this across any kind of screen. Doesn't matter if it's a 16 by 10 or a 5 by 4.
Right.
They just negotiate the screen real estate amongst each other. We also had algorithms where these guys moved away. So let's say this guy here actually needs more room like this. He actually needs room like this. This bubble then would just move down. A fluid UI, it's like a water tank. You put in stones in the water tank.
Right.
They will just
manage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They go out of the way. And for that, this is so cool because now we don't have to worry so much about, oh man, do you really know what your users will use as a monitor setup? What the resolution? That was the old style questions you always ask at the beginning of a project. What's your output media? Give me the size, give me the resolution. We just decide against this one. Everything else, yeah, we cannot really target that. Today it's like, yeah, you know, here, we do it like that. Doesn't really matter too much.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are limits. You cannot really take this all the way down to, let's say, a cell phone for now. You could technically, but you get into some issues for the user experience. So there are some limits, but we can handle them.
Right. So this sounds like if there's a lot of funny math involved in this particular approach, but the benefit is that if we if a developer, for example, does not want to do that math on their own and want to do the fluid UI, they can turn to Infragistics and just get some of their controls, and your controls handle some of that fluid UI
gesture. Exactly.
So this is this is great. This is kind of the beginning, and we definitely hope to have more dialogue with you. Thanks, guys, for watching. Tune in next time, and we'll have Tobias or some of the other very smart people at Infragistics to take us through other UI design patterns.
Thanks, Max.